you're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a heads up on our programming here. President Biden will deliver what the White House calls his first primetime address tonight. We will bring you live NPR coverage starting at 7. The address marks 1 year since COVID-19 was declared a pandemic by the World Health Organization. So join us tonight at 7 on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. Now, for some Wisconsinites, the pandemic has led to unexpected financial gains. They work from home, they collect the same paycheck, but they're not spending money like they used to. For others, it's meant severe financial hardship. WPR's Rachel Vasquez reports on the workers who are facing the deepest toll from the downturn.
On a cold January day in Green Bay, Rita Love is looking for a new job.
Like this one here is in Florida. And it's a delivery driver for Amazon, flexible, $18 to $25 an hour.
She's not finding anything in Green Bay, so she says she might relocate. Among the endless listings, she spots a housing intake job that she has experience with.
Wow, and I didn't even see this one. Let me look at this. I hadn't got to this one yet. This is one that's new that's been sent out. So
Love says she lost her job at a keg repair plant in March and has been out of work for almost a full year. Unemployment helped for a little bit, but she went without the extra money for 2 full months until state officials launched new extended benefits last week. Love said she'd already been cutting back for months.
Well, what I did was not charging anything, even if I needed it. It has to be a real necessity. And far as my cable was concerned, hey, I can cut that off too, but I need my internet.
She's seen the balances in her bank account drop, and now Love is borrowing money from family to get by.
My brother sends me a couple $100. My daughter, who works overtime, just so she can help me out.
So how many people in Wisconsin are struggling like Love during the pandemic? The Marquette Law School poll has been asking people about this since 2016.
Would you describe your family as living comfortably, just getting by, or struggling to make ends meet?
That's John Johnson with Marquette. He says when the pandemic started, the data they were getting back on that question confused them.
At a top line level, the numbers have been remarkably stable over this year. And in fact, in our most recent poll that we just released, we had the highest number of people saying they're living comfortably since we started asking the question in March of 2016.
That was a full 67% of respondents who said they were living comfortably in late October, despite an economic downturn that's brought historic levels of job loss and business closures. So why does it look like people are doing better than they were before the pandemic? Experts say it's because of the way the recession has mainly impacted certain kinds of workers.
So people in the state have been having this extremely divergent experience based on if you're someone who is in a precarious position, a vulnerable job, or someone who is able to keep working from home. And maybe the largest financial hit you took was simply stopping spending so much money at restaurants or going on vacation.
Marquette's own data confirms that if you look a little closer. Over the pandemic, the number of Black Wisconsinites who said they were struggling rose by 11%. And the number of Hispanic Wisconsinites who said they were just getting by jumped by 12%. Number of white Wisconsinites who said they were living comfortably didn't change at all, at 65%. UW-Madison economist Laura Dresser says that's because Black and brown workers are concentrated in low-wage jobs in Wisconsin. And unlike past recessions, the pandemic downturn has hit those workers hard and left higher earners relatively unaffected.
Those of us who are carefully ensconced in our homes are not able to see the desperation in the communities of people who have lost work and cannot figure out how to get food on the table. And so this pandemic exacerbates that divide while giving us fewer ways of seeing across it.
Rita Love is still looking for a new job and trying to stay optimistic. She knows the family that she's leaning on doesn't have a lot of extra money to help out, and she really wants to get back to work.
As long as I'm making a living, an honest living. And that's what makes a person feel good about themselves.
So she clicks through jobs and works on applications 2 hours or more every single day, all in the hopes of getting the kind of steady, full-time job she used to have before the pandemic. Rachel Vasquez, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And now we're discussing learning loss a year into the pandemic. The Hechinger Report covers inequality in education. It found Data point to widespread learning loss and dramatic drops in reading achievement in early elementary grades. Think those first and second graders, with students of color faring far worse. Does your child need more schooling to catch up from learning they missed due to the pandemic or in the virtual setting? Would you enroll them in summer school or support an early fall start? 800-642-1234. John Bales is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Association of School District Administrators. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with an early start. Governor Evers recently suggested schools could start earlier than normal in the fall. What does that mean? What would that look like?
Well, I think it would vary in each community, depending on the circumstances, the interests and needs. But generally speaking, it would simply mean we wouldn't be looking for a post-Labor Day start, and we'd be able to get students back engaged with school at an earlier date. It would probably vary by district in terms of the actual start time, again, based on their interests and needs in their population.
Is this something that is currently being discussed? Is it on the table with districts?
Oh, yes. Very common conversation in districts, both for early start, adjusting calendars throughout the year, next year, and certainly the summer school idea of getting kids reengaged. Very common discussion. I expect we'll see a good deal of that around the state.
We'll talk about summer school here in just a moment, but what would schools need to do to move their start date?
It's a process of requesting a waiver for the start time. That would be through the Department of Instruction. There is a statutory allowance for that for them under emergency circumstances, and certainly the pandemic would qualify as an emergency if ever there was one.
Are schools already doing this? Have there been those waivers in the works?
Yes, there are some that have already been submitted. There are a lot of plans going on right now, accessing and surveying parents in the community in terms of their interest level, sort of your opening questions about what's the interest, would they send their children, what sorts of programming and concerns do they have that they'd like to see addressed. So I think you'll see a lot of variety in the programs, but that planning is going on in earnest right now.
Generally speaking, you know, how early is early? Are we, you know, it's not after Labor Day, but are we talking, you know, August, July, June? I mean, what do these districts mean by an early start?
Well, I think, Kate, that'll vary a little bit as well. But I think most districts are looking at some start time in August, and that would be in combination with summer school likely. And that also varies in terms of start and ending points for summer school throughout the summer. Again, they'd probably look at their local circumstances of parent interest, the extent to which families, for example, are in need of getting back into the workforce. They might have been laid off or at home during this time, but they're going to be going back to the workforce now. And what can schools do to support and accommodate that?
What have you seen by way of parent surveys? How are they gathering input from parents?
That's a really good question. Well, most districts are pretty adept at surveying parents, often putting out things.
Don't I know that? Okay, carry on.
There you go.
Save just a few.
I think, you know, you have to remember they're public schools, and so they are responsive and should be to public interest, public needs. So there's a lot of the surveying going on. That's relatively easy to do. Somewhat more difficult if you have a lot of parents who don't have access to internet and quick and easy electronic ways to do it. So mm-hmm. then you still have to mailing and other sources. But at any rate, they're doing that. And actually, to your question, it varies again by community. If a district was fortunate enough to have the circumstances where they could be open much of the year, you know, you'll hear from some of those parents that we'd like the kids to have a break and that they'd like to have summer, where they don't have an obligation to be in summer school, or they'd like the full summer and they don't want to come back early. If the early start is also coupled with the possibility of adjusting calendars, then you always have family situations where they're either more or less able to accommodate a calendar start. So you'll see differences. If districts were largely virtual due to their community circumstances, of not being able to get kids into the building easily and safely, then they're more likely to be pressing for both summer school and early start for kids.
We're talking with John Bales, who's executive director of the Wisconsin Association of School District Administrators, and we're examining how districts are addressing learning loss in the pandemic and what those discussions might look like. John, how do teachers feel about the potential early start? Is there any insights there?
Well, like the community, districts will be surveying staff as well in terms of their interest and their ability to do that. It may result, if you don't have access to a full staffing, it might mean adjusting programming for the opening of school early. But I think generally speaking, there's a keen interest on the educators' part to get re-engaged with kids, especially in those cases where they've had to be virtual for a good length of time. They're very anxious to get re-engaged with the students, particularly in the, while it's true of all students, I think particularly at the early elementary ages. I think in your opening comments, you referred to the studies suggesting that it's going to be a critical issue for us to make sure that we've got kids reacclimated and that we're...
Yeah, those first and second graders with reading loss and reading achievement has been seriously impacted. That was what the data was indicating. Yep. What concerns do districts have there for that early elementary level?
Well, I think it will vary amongst the students. It has some relationship to the extent to which they were consistently able to engage if they were in virtual learning. Mm-hmm. Not everyone consistent access, the extent to which there's enrichment opportunities within the family during the time that they might have been removed from school. So it will vary, but I think we know the critical importance of a good foundation for reading and those early literacy opportunities for students. So that'll be a focus area for districts, I'm sure, early on to assess, practically where the kids are at and where do we start.
What would this mean for teacher contracts and how you rework those contracts if your school year changes significantly?
Good question. It would, again, probably vary by district. You might have people that adjust their calendars and simply move the number of days that a teacher might work in their contract. Others might be looking at actually adding days to the year. We're fortunate in that the federal relief packages that have been provided by the federal government will allow us to, in some cases, increase staffing and be able to employ people for those extra days. So I think you'll see a variety of things probably across the state.
John Bales, he heads up the Wisconsin Association of School District Administrators. We're discussing how districts aim to shore up learning loss in the pandemic. Are you worried about your child falling further and further behind? What has been the greatest challenge for them in this pandemic? Parents, what do you think administrators need to know about learning loss? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with John Bales here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation on what districts may do about learning loss. Governor Evers said at a WisPolitics event last week that schools have an obligation to get kids caught up.
Whether that's summer school or making sure that next year we start, maybe even start early. We have to look at all options, and I know school districts are already considering some of those ideas.
What option is your district discussing with you? Teachers, are you worried that more and more of your kids are falling behind and need intervention this summer? What is your solution? 800-642-1234. John Bales leads the Wisconsin Association of School District Administrators, and he's with us for 10 more minutes. You know, John, our state had a huge achievement gap between white students and students of color before the pandemic struck. And the data tell us these racial and socioeconomic gaps are only growing worse. How are districts addressing this issue?
I think in a variety of ways, Kate, certainly increasing the instructional time around reading and literacy related activities during the day, whether that's been virtual or in person. adjusting really, in many cases, our instructional methods. We know a great deal more about reading. Your listeners have probably heard and seen information about the science of reading and reevaluating how we go about instructing reading for students. So that professional development and implementation work is ongoing in districts. We have an emphasis on trying to get more reading specialists, reading interventionists in schools. It's going to take a good deal to lift in some cases some of the students. But I think we're also observing that the loss is not as significant as some might have feared for many students. I think it's more appropriate to call it a learning disruption, certainly, but not necessarily a loss. But absolutely for some students it is, and they'll be looking at both methodology shifts as well as increased instructional time with those students and extra time, hence the conversations about summer school, early start, probably after school kinds of programming for enrichment and acceleration. So a good number of opportunities for kids.
What is on the table then with summer school? What options are districts looking at with their summer school programs?
Good question. Again, a lot of variability we see in the planning at this point. Some will run a longer summer school period, so as much as 4 or 5 weeks. Notably, those also include typically, particularly in high-density districts where there's a good deal of poverty amongst the population, they'll be looking at food programs for those students as well, both breakfast and lunch. So it's not just the academic side of the equation. Others will probably still run a more traditional 2 to 3 week session. They might run a couple of those sessions, again, based on parent engagement and how many of them are interested and willing and whether or not they were able to be in person during the year.
When do districts assess eligibility for summer school and what numbers they might have?
Typically, they'll again be surveying. Internally, they may identify students that they would really encourage to participate in some extended learning. And honestly, summer school programming varies greatly, always has, and probably will again in terms of what's included in it. Mm. But typically, they'll look internally as well as then reaching out to parents to see an interest, not only in coming, but what they might be interested in seeing as a part of the program.
We're talking with John Bales, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Association of School District Administrators, and we're looking at what is on the table as districts address learning disruption, as John says, and some learning loss in the pandemic. Bill is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Bill. What are your thoughts?
Good morning. I worked for 25 years in 3 different districts in southeast Wisconsin, and I taught English and writing, and I think summer school is the way to go. The kids want to go to summer school, but they want to go in the mornings. I would go back to modular scheduling, which means 2-hour classes. I would start with writing, not reading. Writing is so passive. The kids need to get back into the routine of school first. Don't start hammering them. Let them get back in. And from writing in their journals, I would be able to discover how to proceed. They need to write. Writing leads to reading. Reading does not lead to writing. Summer school is the way to go.
Bill, thank you. John, your insights there that, you know, writing is the way to go here in summer school.
Well, I think Bill makes a good point, and those are the various sorts of conversations going on in the districts in terms of how we spend the time if we engage kids in summer school. You don't want the entire time based on one particular skill, and there's certainly discussion about which skills are most critical to begin with. I think all of the programs will begin by some sort of an assessment of where the kids are in terms of when they present themselves in summer school.
How do you negotiate that delicate balance of summer and, you know, ensuring kids aren't overloaded, that they're not burned out?
Good question, Kate. That is, you know, I think educators are very sensitive to that issue. They're not naive to the fact that it's summer for kids and that the year has been intense and traumatic, not just for adults, but for the children as well. And so I think there's going to be a heavy emphasis in combining both learning opportunities and experiences for kids with the socialization, the emotional rebuilding for kids, trying to help them adjust to what they've been through. So I think they'll be looking at ways to balance very much the time that they're spending with them and get them reacclimated, as it were, to the school setting. But kids miss the socialization just as all of us as adults have, and that'll be an important part of getting them into summer school as well.
Have there been talks of what summer school would be like if it has to be virtual, or is virtual summer school off the board?
I wouldn't say it's off the board. Again, it depends what we're finding now in terms of interest. Frankly, a lot of kids thrive in a virtual environment. And so we may find that districts are designing both and giving parents options for how they might be engaged. In those situations where kids have been largely virtual for a good chunk of the year, I think in those cases, they'll probably be leaning more towards getting them in person so they can get them reacclimated. But frankly, we find a number of parents would like to continue the virtual. In fact, surveying suggests many of them will be interested in that going into the fall as well. So school will probably look different in terms of options that parents might have.
Cindy is with us in Appleton. Hi, Cindy.
Hello. We talked about summer being kind of a burnout area for kids and not them not wanting to go. But there's lots of states where they have year-round school. The kids go to school in the summer. So I think we're making a bigger deal out of that than it is. And I also think parents work in the summer, too. So I just don't think summer school is that big of an issue.
Cindy, thanks. You know, is this a step toward year-round school?
Well, I do think, honestly, in the future, school programming and school calendars will look a little bit different, probably more flexible. Again, you're trying to accommodate, to your last caller's point, the varying interests and wishes of families. And so there are some who highly value longer school opportunities, and there are others who really value the summer. So, you know, always districts are in that position of trying to navigate that and satisfy as much as the population while they're still attending to the kids as they can.
John, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
John Bales, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Association of School District Administrators. Stay with us. We check in with a journalist from ProPublica about her reporting in the pandemic. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.